Blog Talk Radio.
I'm just plain Bill.
And we're here to talk about the events of the day, the week, even the whole year.
Yeah, yeah.
So far. From our point of view. A conservative's point of view.
Yes.
Conservative point of view.
That's us. We're conservatives.
Some people have questioned that about me this week.
That's fine.
Okay. Everybody has a few little quirks in their lives.
Yeah, they do.
I have mine.
Yep.
You have
we all
yours.
Got them.
You have yours. Mine are right, yours are wrong.
Yeah, exactly, I know.
Yeah. Good evening, Bill. How are you?
Hey, it is a wet and stormy night out. We have had an inch and a half of rain as of about, about 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'm liking it.
We had nothing.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's actually getting warm. We may go above 32 for the first time since before Christmas.
Wow.
On Thursday.
Yeah.
So, first day
we'll cross our fingers for you.
And, you know, it'll just make things all messy.
Yeah, I know.
So, you know, and when it gets warm like this, that means the snow is coming.
Well, that's true.
Just on its way. So your inch and a half of rain is worth about, 6 to 8 inches of snow by the time it gets to me.
Yeah, I'm sorry. give it 3 or 4 days, something like that. It'll get there.
Yeah. Let's get right into it. I got a whole list of things today, and the weather talk goes right into perfect thing.
Cool.
According to climatologists,
yes,
we are about to enter into a new ice age. Yes.
Ooh. Ow. Ah.
The expectation is we're going to spend the next 20 or 30 years cooled off. Chill, people. Chill.
That could get ugly.
Florida's looking at a multi-billion-dollar crop loss over this week.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Global warming.
Hello, Al Gore.
Hey. So, I have my question. We've talked about global warming and all the cold
and stuff like that.
But my question is, somebody suggested, you know, if we would just leave, you know, the climatologists out of politics, then the environmentalists and conservatives would take care of the environment. I found that statement to be kind of interesting.
Really? Let me see if I have this right. If we left the climatologists out of politics, then the environmentalists and the conservatives would get business taken care of.
That's the comment that I read. Yes.
Interesting. I don't know that I agree with it, but interesting.
Well, it kind of makes sense to me in the following sense: many conservatives, not all of them, but many conservatives are sportsmen, sports people that like the outdoors,
that hunt,
that fish.
Yep.
And generally speaking, hunters and fishermen are good conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
Let me rephrase that. Good conservationists.
Yes, absolutely.
We want to make sure that our animal herds that are used for hunting are maintained,
mm-hmm.
not overdone.
Yep.
We want to keep the weather, the herds in good shape physically.
Yep.
Sportsmen want to make sure that there's plenty of fish for fishing next year. They don't want
yep.
to have a big problem with it this year.
Yep.
And generally speaking, sportsmen have a tendency to be somewhat neat in their impacts on the environment. You know, hunters tend to be pretty neat about picking up casings and stuff like that when it
yes,
occurs.
Yes, they do.
Of course,
yes.
not all of them do, but you know, it's a
Most
general rule.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, people that enjoy golf, they have a tendency to be polite.
Yes.
You know? Except for golf, Tiger!
Well, other than Tiger, but besides that.
So, you know, fishermen tend to be, you know, pay attention to the fish habitats and such like that.
Yes.
From that point of view, I understand. I just don't understand where the environmentalists come in there because, of course, they think the only thing that belongs in nature is nature, and we're not part of it.
Hmm.
So I don't understand where that part comes in.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand where that part comes in. I mean, we are the top of the food chain. So when you take us out, somebody else gets to be top of the food chain. Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody else that doesn't have a intellect to manage a herd. Of course, you know, the problem is, of course, they say that nature takes care of itself, but it is not unusual for, you know, a predator to overhunt their areas and then walk away from it and go to another area so it can recover, rather than managing it without causing it to be overhunted. In any case, my question is, what is a conservative point of view on the Earth? For the Earth. What is our principle associated with the Earth? Got an idea? I have an idea.
Well, okay, go ahead. Put it out there. Let me see if I agree with it.
It comes from a scriptural principle in that, you know, we are to be good stewards.
Yes, we are.
That doesn't mean that we don't use the natural resources of the Earth. We just do it in a responsible way.
Okay.
And
So far, so good.
From my point of view, that's perfectly okay. I don't think environmentalists have any clue about what responsible means. They just say that any activity is irresponsible.
And away we go.
And of course, you know, Democrats, you know, the liberal side, you know, they just want to control the environment.
Yep.
They don't
that doesn't work, by the way, folks.
Stewardship, they want to control it. They want to have the levers that raise CO2 up or down, and we have to provide, pay them the, what do they call that? What is it when you go to the king and you pay him? You know, to allow him to let you live.
Oh my gosh, I don't know about the king. With Islam, it's jizya.
Yeah. Some kind of, you know, not tithe. What is that? What is that word? Huh.
Hmm. Huh. I don't know what.
Well, kings expect a certain amount of gifts from their
yes.
populations, you know, just because there's a king. We call them taxes now, but at the time it was, you know, it was meant to be a gift. What was that called? I'm lost. I'll have to worry about it otherwise. Okay. Anyways, I just wanted to throw that out there, you know, because with the global change in weather.
Yeah.
Excuse me a second, I just dropped everything. The global drop in weather, you know, now they're going to say that we're going to have 20 or 30 years worth of cooling. But it's all associated with global warming. Alright. And to tie it into something that happened just a little bit, a couple of hours ago. And I don't mean to make it too much of a joke. There's going to be a lot of people dead. The Haiti earthquake.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I think what's happened is that the Earth's crust had a quick temperature change and it cracked.
Oh, yeah, really? Okay. Good.
You know, you got all that cold air spilling down into the tropical areas, you know. They're just not used to it. And the crust just, you know. Like
and it cracked. Okay. Whatever.
So, anyways. All right. Let's move on from our weather report.
Yeah.
To macaca. Sorry. Wrong word. Light-skinned Negro.
Oh, light-skinned Negroes. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Now, you know what? My opinion is, I don't care.
Yeah, okay.
I have been less than, you know, back in the fall when Letterman said his things about Sarah Palin and her daughters, I was, you know, whatever. My general opinion is that stupid people are going to say stupid things. And if you do lots of jumping up and down that they made stupid things, eventually at some point you're just going to look stupid doing it.
I see. Okay.
So, you know, Harry Reid, nobody on the right or on the left is going to throw Harry Reid under the bus.
No, he's not getting thrown under the bus.
Not going to get thrown under the bus.
Nope.
So, and the fact of the matter is that he said it almost a year and a half ago.
Even though it's only getting reported now.
It's only getting reported now, but I wonder, did he apologize to Obama a year and a half ago?
Yeah, well, I don't remember what I said a year and a half ago.
Or only when he got caught?
Probably only when he got caught. But for me, the issue isn't the racism. It's the hypocrisy of the double standard.
I don't care about double standards.
I'm sorry, it is.
It is a double standard, but you know
well,
what?
Well, of course it is.
It's a double standard that's certainly not going to change.
Well, it isn't going to change until we make it an issue. Yeah, that's true.
I don't think it's going to even make a change even if we make an issue of it. Eventually what's going to happen is, you know, it's going to sound like we're a bunch of whining little brats that are going, oh, it's not fair, it's not fair. It's not fair.
Well, but the alternative, Tracy, is that, okay, so you don't make an issue of it, and it simply continues on. That's not acceptable.
I want to make an issue of it, but not on the fairness or not on the hypocrisy issue. I know. You know, say that, you know, the snide and condescending remark of Harry Reid towards Barack Obama is not isolated. There are significant issues where Democrats have been saying things about Barack Obama over the course of the last 2 years that is not getting reported, you know, by the mainstream press, but
mm-hmm.
It shows a certain consistency in the Democratic Party that is both disturbing in its orientation, in other words, suggesting that Negroes need to know their place.
Mm-hmm.
And consistent, and disturbing in how consistent it is across a broad range of Democratic operatives. Now, from that point of view, I think we can make, you know, we can make hay. But to suggest that the double standard or hypocrisy, I just forget that. Fairness is, you know, we tell clients all the time that come in, you know, and want to talk about, you know, divorce and custody and stuff like that, first thing you have to do is you have to take that idea of fairness and just throw it out the window. You're getting ready to enter our court system, and fairness has nothing to do with it.
That's true.
Okay, so get this concept of fairness out of your head. It doesn't exist. So the hypocrisy issue, the double standard issue, non-issue. It's not an issue. The condescending attitude, the patronizing attitude of Democrats towards minorities, specifically blacks, but minorities in general, is it's worse than pathetic. It is obviously, you know, widespread from the top all the way down, and I just don't understand how minorities tolerate that type of, you know, condescending attitude, you know, from people they think are their friends.
Mm-hmm. Duh. You know, we may simply have different ideas as to how it gets attacked. I mean, I don't disagree with anything that you just said. If I were a member of a minority, I would be incensed. Not so much as to what was actually said, but because of that pattern of behavior that says, y'all just listen to us. We'll take care of you. Don't you worry your pretty little head about it.
Right. It's the condescending, namby-pamby, you know, we're your betters attitude.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just that's the place where I would like to see things go on. The hypocrisy, the double standard, throw it out. It's a waste of time. You know, it's a not fair issue, and frankly, I don't care about it. So the question this produces in me, you know, people say this all the time. Is racism alive and well, you know, in our society? I think probably the most pernicious area where racism continues to exist is in the political sphere.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
Absolutely.
Think racism is that big of a deal at this point, and of course I'm going to get all kinds of crap from people. You know, I don't think it's that prevalent in the general economy.
Okay.
My experience, you know, working in, you know, three states in the last 15 years, is that it's very minor where it occurs. It's not systemic in any way. There's probably certain places where, in fact, it is, but generally speaking, society-wide, in normal everyday life, I don't think it exists. I think it exists in certain fringe areas. Certain fields may have it more extensively. But I think the worst place it exists right now is in the political sphere, where it's used as a tool, a bargaining chip,
mm-hmm.
a way to beat people about the head, you know, to accomplish political goals.
Okay. I'm not going to disagree with that. And I have, I mean, yes, granted, my work experience has been all in one state, pretty much. But I haven't seen it. Granted, I live in a pretty rural area. I have since 1964, with an exception of about a year and a half. The only times that I have experienced racism has been the reverse racism when I lived in Oakland. And that was truly reverse racism.
Well, I lived for a long time in Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, and even in that place, ignoring the political sphere, I just didn't see lots of it. In the economic sphere, it just didn't occur.
Yeah.
In my experience. So, I'm thinking that at this particular point, the biggest place where racism is rearing its ugly little head is in politics. And unfortunately for our society, it tends to be coming from one particular side.
Mm-hmm.
It's not ours!
No, it isn't.
It's not ours!
No.
No. Okay, we didn't get a chance to get into this too much, but last week, I think before the show actually had happened, maybe we did talk a little bit about it. 87,000 jobs in December, poof.
Poof, gone. Hello, goodbye.
That wasn't the big number. That wasn't the big number, people.
It was not.
The 87,000 jobs, poof, was not the big number. Big number was 644,000 people went,
yes.
Poof.
Yes.
644,000 people said, you know what? I'm done. This is too much. I'm not getting anywhere. This is a waste of time. I'm out of here.
And they disappeared.
They done disappeared.
Yep, they did.
They were raptured.
Yes. I like that. Yes, indeed, they were.
2.5 million people raptured in the last year.
Yes, indeed.
Gone. Just disappeared.
Yeah, they did.
Lowest civilian population workforce participation rate in 16 years.
Yep. Isn't that amazing?
It's amazing. Stupidity that is going on.
Yeah.
Now, there is a question. My friend Tom has brought this up.
Uh-huh.
You know, where are all these people going? Because, of course, what is going up, and I brought this up in the show back in December, we're actually right around the beginning of the year,
mm-hmm.
was that unemployment benefits had shot up like 23%.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But apparently we only had a 1% increase in the number of people doing it. Well, what's going on here?
Yeah.
He brought up the point that Social Security outlays have jumped in the last 4 months.
Oh, really?
Yeah. An unexpected increase in the number of people signing up for Social Security. So what's happening, I think...
Stop. Is that Social Security disability, or is that pure Social Security?
Pure Social Security.
Wow.
He is suggesting that it's post-Social Security. It's hard to find out the distinction between the disability and the income side of it without digging deep into it. But the jump suggests that people in the 62, 63, 64 age group have exhausted their unemployment benefits, and rather than worry about going any further, have simply gone on to Social Security. And now they'll be willing to take something much less because they've got a steady source of income coming in as a foundation.
Hmm.
The key here is that means that those people may not come back into the work.
They may not.
When things come back up.
In fact, probably won't.
Which will screw some people up because they're expecting that, in fact, unemployment's going to stay high because those people will come back into the workforce as jobs start building up, holding the number higher than it would naturally be. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out if and when our economy actually starts turning around.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not so certain that, in fact, it's going to be turning around anytime soon. I just read a story. 500,000 option arms to reset over the next 18 months in California.
Ouch. Hey.
Ouch. And we're not talking about resets where it's going to go up an interest, you know, 1 point or 2 points. We're talking about people that are going to have double and triple the size of their mortgage payments. People are going to go from $1,100, $1,200 to $4,000 a month.
And this was just in California?
Just in California. 500,000 option mortgage. You guys are so screwed.
Yeah, we are.
And of course, we're moving in.
Welcome to California.
Victoria went to me this weekend. She goes, "Have you heard anything good about California recently?" I'm like, "No."
No, not really.
No, just absolutely nothing good about California at this point. You know, services are going to go in the tank, schools are going to go in the tank, you know, shops are leaving in droves, you know, so, you know, real estate prices have come back up about 10% over the last 5 or 6 months. I don't expect that to hold up any longer. Once the December and January numbers come out, it's going to start showing, you know, it's reversed itself. They're going to go back down to where it is. So GDP comes out for the first quarter, which is the last 3 months of the calendar year, first quarter of the fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
First pass at the number will happen around the 26th or 7th, Tuesday or Wednesday of the week, 2 weeks from now.
Mm-hmm.
Care to make a prediction?
Oh, God, on GDP?
On GDP. Let's make it easy. Positive or negative?
The number will come out positive.
Okay. Do you think it'll stay that way through two revisions?
Oh, boy. Yes, pretty much politically has to. But now you need to ask me the question that you haven't asked me. Do I believe it? And the answer to that is no, I don't.
Based on Christmas sales only, and in relationship to the fourth quarter, I think it's going to show positive.
Okay.
But I think if you look at the first quarter last year versus the first quarter this year, I think it'll show a negative position on a year-by-year basis.
That's possible.
I think it'll show positive. I think it's going to show so weak that it's going to drive everyone crazy. I'm thinking it's going to be less than 1%.
That's the final number.
No, I think that's the number they're going to report.
Oh, my goodness.
And I don't think it'll survive the revision.
Mm.
But I think it'll be revised down to like 2 or 3 tenths. And then the final revision will put it negative. But that won't happen until March.
Boy, that's interesting. I'm thinking that politically they can't let that happen. And so therefore they're going to cook that number the same way I think they cooked the last number, which has already been revised down twice, down to a 2.2.
A pretty significant change. I mean, you know, that's a 30% drop in that revision.
Exactly.
So, you know, I think, you know, the only reason we're, you know, above 2% was because 1.9% of it was stimulus money.
Well, that's true. That's true.
You know, that put the improvement in that fourth quarter to somewhere around 3/10.
Yeah. And we do not have that stimulus number now.
Right. So assuming that, you know, with the Christmas bump, we may have gotten 3/10 of a pump. You know, but Christmas was actually a little bit better than expected. It was about 3%. So, you know, I'm willing to argue that we might get one out of it. But the fact of the matter is, over those 3 months, we lost another 210,000 jobs.
Yeah, something like that.
Net
something close.
Between the 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
That's going to have a negative impact on the economy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I'm thinking about 1%, somewhere around 1%, and then it'll be revised to a negative number by March. That's my opinion, and I'm just going to stick to it.
And she's sticking to it, by God. It's her story. I just don't see how that can happen politically. And I think that they will cook books again. I think that they will change definitions as they just did with jobs. I think they will do everything they can to make sure that that is some kind of a positive number.
Here's why I think that 6 months ago I would have agreed with you. 3 months ago I would have said, yeah, that's probable, and why I think that it's not likely going forward.
Okay.
Last week, I suggested to you that Scott Brown was not going to win in Massachusetts.
You suggested that.
I didn't suggest that. I still think he's going to lose.
Okay.
I don't think he's going to lose by very much.
Okay.
I think
I'm not sure I agree with that, but okay.
I think he's going to lose by so little, as a matter of fact, that exactly what people are worrying is going to happen is going to happen. I think the rat's going to start jumping ship so fast that you'll be able to walk across him on the water.
Hmm.
And the bureaucrats are going to go, you know, things are about to change, and we need to make sure that we're buttering our bread on the right side.
Yes, that's true.
And I use that term right side carefully. and so
yeah.
I don't think they're going to be able to get away with cooking some books.
Oh, sure they can.
No, I don't think so.
I'm sitting here saying, yeah, Tracy, I understand where you're coming from. I don't think that they can not cook those books. I think that they are so invested in a positive GDP that they will do whatever it is that they have to do to get to that. Now, it may not be much, but it'll be positive. And they will say, well, see, looky here. This was the depth of winter, everything slowed down, and we still had a positive GDP.
And I think they're going to play it the other way. I think they're going to try and do everything they can to make this quarter as bad as possible. And do everything they can to burn as much bad news into everybody's psyche right here, right now. So that they've got nowhere to go but up over the next 6 months going into the elections.
Hmm. Well, that's an interesting take on it.
I think they need to get... I think that might be a whole lot of things. If healthcare has got to get resolved soon, one way or the other. I think if healthcare loses, I think they need to put it behind them really fast and really not pick up cap and trade and other, right now, big serious losing propositions.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I can't think of any good Democratic situations right now that's not a losing proposition for the Democrats.
Well, that's true. I mean, you know, they have ruled out doing any kind of tax cuts to stimulate the economy. So they're left with fiscal and monetary policy. They are left with increasing government jobs. I mean, that's the only shots in their quiver.
And my problem is, you know, there's a couple of things that are coming up. Most people don't realize it, but in the first week of February, the BLS will report its adjustments to the birth-death model for 2009.
Yep.
And the number that I heard, the number that you and I had talked about, was somewhere around 600,000, 700,000 jobs were going to just disappear.
Yes, they
and
will.
And unfortunately, that doesn't change the percentage on the unemployment figure.
Well, not on you, too, it doesn't.
But I heard something last week that the number is closer to 900,000.
Ouch. Ooh.
Now, that's not a number they're going to be able to hide too much from.
No, it isn't.
January's unemployment should the seasonally adjusted numbers will not be that bad because of last January's numbers were actually pretty frighteningly bad. But the unadjusted numbers could easily hit 2 million, which would be a startlingly large number of people losing their jobs into January.
Well, and that would put unemployment, actual unemployment, not the fakey numbers that they use, but the actual unemployment, at somewhere around 24%. Maybe a little bit higher, but right in that.
Well, depression level number.
Yeah.
Depression level number. So, I think they've got no choice in the matter. I think what they'll want to do is there's going to be so much bad news coming out that they'll go ahead and let the bad news come out, hopefully burying it with all the other bad news.
Speaking of which, have you seen any of the last Friday's bank failures?
Actually, I haven't. I haven't seen any of them.
Me either. But they're there. Got to be. I mean, I'm not sitting here prepared to say, oh, no, there weren't any bank failures. I mean, even from Podunk, Kansas or someplace.
You know, I sort of remember reading on one, but come to think of it, I have not seen my usual week-ending report for these banks.
Yep.
Huh.
Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
Yes, it is.
Well,
just another little data point.
Apparently, Congress is getting ready to subpoena Geithner.
Oh, boy.
To do some explanations on AIG. That would suggest that Mr. Geithner shall be out by Easter at the latest.
Yeah. You think?
I think.
Oh, Lord. I wonder if that poor sucker knew what he was getting into.
Oh, man. Bad news.
Okay.
So, I want to go back to Massachusetts for just a moment.
Okay.
Go lay down. Massachusetts, can he win? I don't think he's going to win. He could win. I don't think he's going to win. If he wins, Democrat vote will make the Haitian earthquake look, a little rumble in the streets. If he loses by less than a percentage point, I don't think it's any much better for the Democrats. He has to lose big, 8, 9, 10 points for them to go, oof, dodge that bullet.
Yeah.
Anything like 1 or 2%, or he wins, and I do think things are up for grabs.
Yep.
Then the next election is in first week of February.
Well, no, actually, there's one going on right now.
Is that the Virginia one? Is it Virginia?
Yeah, that's that Virginia 27th district, something like that.
It looked like, if I remember right, that the conservative dude was doing okay.
Cool.
That was the word I heard. The word I saw. I just glanced at it and saw it. If somebody knows what's going on there, let me know. But the Senate seat's the big deal. And I think, what's the one in the first week of February? I think it's only a congressional seat. I don't think it's not a Senate seat. Where was it? Not Texas. Somewhere is. All right, I'm not going to worry about it. I'll dig it up for next week. I kind of suggested this. Regardless of what happens on health care, I don't think Obama can get card check or cap and trade up on the agenda this this year.
No,
I think
they're
done.
I don't. I think that's done.
I think those two are done.
I mean,
so
what possible motive could they have for it at this point?
Well, the problem with card check is if health care passes by the Senate bill, unions are going to be pissed to the hilt.
Oh, man. Big time.
They're going to be pissed to the hilt.
Yep.
So, you know, I think they would really, really want card check, and I think Obama would really want him to get card check, but I don't think anybody in their right mind is going to, on the right or even the center is going to be interested in card check coming up, you know, because everyone will know that it's strictly a stop for the unions.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And if healthcare fails,
I mean, but assume for a second. A couple of things. One, Scott Brown wins in Massachusetts. That kills Obamacare. Kills
Unless they do what I said we were going to do last week.
Which is that the House accepts the Senate thing. I don't think that's going to happen.
There certainly is a whole lot of screaming that the House doesn't want to roll over for the Senate.
Exactly. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they will tweak it. And if they tweak it, it's got to go all the way back through the process again.
They tweak it's dead. In my opinion, is they tweak it's dead.
Yep.
Harry Reid won't be able to hang on to it.
Yep. So if Massachusetts goes for Brown, health care is dead. That makes the unions happy. At that point, they've got three big issues before them. One is cap and trade. At the very least, that'll get filibustered. It's going to take 60 votes to get it. They aren't going to get them. I mean, they can get anything they want through the House. I mean, that's not a problem. They can do that. But the Senate is a different matter.
Right. There's too many Midwestern and Central
senators
that rely on energy to put
Yep. The second big thing is card check. Unions are going to be happy that they dodged the bullet on health care, i.e. their plans don't get taxed. So that's a toss-up. I don't think they can get it passed, but I mean, it's a toss-up. The third big issue is immigration and immigration reform. And I don't think they've got a chance in hell of passing that.
Not if a Republican wants to win, you know, keep their seat.
That's exactly right. I mean, that just is not going to happen.
Okay. I kind of thought about this the other day. I hate to throw water under people's heads. In a way, I don't want Scott Brown to win.
Yeah, okay. All right.
This is why. Okay. Let's assume that he wins. And because of all kinds of stink, Harry Reid has no choice but to sit him before any vote in the House, in the Senate, on health care.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And he becomes the deciding vote that doesn't put it through. Who can the Democrats blame for not getting health care done? The obstructionist Republicans.
Sure.
Okay. My opinion is that even if they had 60 votes in the Senate right now, even if Coakley wins, okay, healthcare is dead. Unless they do what I suggested they're going to do, healthcare is dead, which means that the left is going to hold the Democrats 100% responsible for it.
Hmm.
And frankly, I'd like them to own it. I don't want them to be able to blame the Republicans for not getting it done. I want them to own it. And right now, they own it.
You know, I would agree with you, except that there is the possibility that they could actually get it passed.
Sure. What's the probability?
Better than 50%, I think.
I think it's only 50% if the House passes the Senate version. Otherwise, I don't think so.
Well, I guess time will tell.
I think it's a 50-50 chance that the House will do that and get it passed. But But once they don't, I don't give it a 50-50 chance. I give it maybe a 25% chance of getting passed.
For me, that's too much. I don't want that thing anywhere close to getting written into law.
And this is why I think I'm being consistent. Okay. I argued that the voting for the lesser of two evils was still voting for evil, and that voting for McCain was still voting for evil.
Yeah.
Even though I understood that the possibility that if more people agreed with me, you know, acted upon that belief, that the likelihood was that Obama was going to become president.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I simply decided that it was more important for me to do the right thing than to look for the right outcome.
Yeah, except that I think in Scott Brown's case, I can have both. I can have my cake and eat it, too. And actually, he's right on your issues. He's also right on my issues. The only misstep that he made was in, apparently, his first debate with Coakley. He said people have a right to health care.
Yeah.
Now, that didn't sit good with me. But he also said that he would vote to get rid of this one.
All right. Let's talk about those other issues for a moment, because there's something else going on that I actually had this down for my last thing to do to talk about. Right. We've only got 13 minutes, so...
Yeah, well, we better get to them then.
We've kind of touched on the other one. Congress is back next week. Is there, a health care deal, in the works?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think they're certainly trying really hard, but I don't think it's done yet. Palin has skipped the Massachusetts.
Yes, she has.
And I said, I think she's trying to stay out of it, to try and make it not a national thing, but to make it a local thing.
Yep.
And I think that's working exactly the way I think Scott Brown is doing that. I think he's keeping it local. He's keeping it, Massachusetts voters.
Yep.
And that's absolutely the right lesson to have learned from New York 23.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think her staying out of it is exactly the right thing. And the fact that the White House has sent somebody up into Massachusetts and has done just about everything in their power in the last 48 hours to try and drag Palin into it.
Exactly. I think that's so funny.
All right. You and I are going to disagree on a whole chunk of this. And I thought about saying, Bill, sign off so that nobody thinks for a second that I'm actually getting all over you about this.
I know that you are not. This is not a personal.
So I thought about that, and I thought, no, this is a conversation between you and I, and we know where things stand on this.
Exactly.
Okay. Many people on the right have been screaming for the healthcare discussions to be done on C-SPAN. Transparency, transparency, transparency.
Yep.
Well, on Monday, transparency disappeared because a whole lot of people on the right said, no transparency, no transparency, absolutely no transparency. And the Supreme Court agreed, for the moment, that the appeals court trial against Proposition 8 in California started on Monday, and on an overwhelming way, the judge in the case had asked for public opinion, public input into whether it should be televised or not, and the numbers were staggering, over 100,000 signatures, please televise, versus less than 100 to say, no, don't do it.
Okay.
The
only question that I would ask is this. That judge ever done anything like that before?
No, but his comment was that it was such a divisive and strongly held issue on both sides, that the more transparency, the better.
Yeah, well, and we all believe that.
So, yeah, apparently not.
Yeah, apparently not.
For those that don't know, and I don't think that there's anybody that don't know, the Supreme Court in California ruled that separate but equal was wrong, and that the separate civil unions for homosexual couples that was all but exactly the same thing as marriage for heterosexual couples did constitute under the California Constitution a separate but equal and therefore discriminatory practice, and therefore unconstitutional, was taken care of by Proposition 8, which was a ballot issue put on the California ballot and voted on in November, in which the California people said, we're going to amend our Constitution so that we got this thing straight, one man, one woman. And that passed. Not overwhelmingly, but it did pass by a comfortable margin.
Yep.
I think it was, what, 4 points, 5 points?
Something like that.
Something like that. And once that was done, a lawsuit has been brought before the appeals court in California that the action was the amendment to the Constitution of California was an unconstitutional infringement upon the rights of homosexuals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have read the Supreme Court's opinion. My opinion was that they would uphold the amendment process, which they
mm-hmm.
did. And, of course, that kind of negates the entire idea that it was an activist judge, because if a judge says, Constitution says, this is discriminatory and you can't do that, and then the Constitution allows for the amendment, and the amendment was passed by popular vote, you know, the Supreme Court said that's exactly the way it's supposed to happen and we're not going to get in the way of that. That Supreme Court suggests that, to me, that Supreme Court acted correctly in both situations
mm-hmm.
and therefore was not activist in either.
Mm-hmm.
The argument that the California Supreme Court was activist, in my opinion, throw that argument out away.
Okay.
In any case, I've gotten into a whole lot of arguments with a lot of people over the last 10 days or so.
Yeah, you have. I've been kind of following your half of them. Well, both halves if I'm following the other person. But.
So, I've been willing to accept the premise of the argument proposed by the other side. But one of the things, and this is the thing that's driving me crazy.
Yep.
Okay? And it's the place where I want people that listen to me to pay attention to things. It's not about definitions. It's not about the definition of marriage. It's not. It's not about the laws. It's not about the 1971 Supreme Court decision. It's not about DOMA. It's not about, 30 states doing, one-man, woman marriage laws.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
it's
mm-hmm.
not. It's not even about traditions, because less than 50 years ago, a man could rape his wife and she couldn't accuse him of rape because under the law, he had the right to take sex from her without her consent.
Tracy, that's not a fair argument. I mean, if we want to argue homosexuality and the constitutionality of same-sex marriages, then fine, let's argue that. But let's don't try to say, oh, well, because a man could rape his wife 50 years ago, that makes this okay.
No. The point I want to make
is
no, listen to me. The point that I want to make is that traditional marriage hasn't been so great. Okay? But it's not about traditions. It's not. Okay, it is about the principle, my pursuit of my happiness, and how my actions don't infringe upon the liberties of another person. Why the government should have the authority or the ability to stop my pursuit of happiness when that pursuit does not infringe upon the liberties of others.
Okay. I mean, I understand your argument.
And I think, I'm hoping that David Boies, who is a conservative.
Yes, he is.
Who represented George Bush in, you know, 2000 in, you know, the election issue, who has no problem with establishing his conservative credentials.
Nope.
Who is, in fact, standing up for the plaintiffs. He is the plaintiff's attorney in this case.
Yep. Same is true of Ted Olson. Ted Olson is on the same side.
Ted Olson, same side. You know, the two of them, you know, opposite sides of the boat, you know, standing up, doing this argument. It is, I'm hoping that they focus on the principle. I don't think they can win on the legality. I think it's quite clear, and you and I and a lot of people have paid attention to this conversation. You and I have talked about the fact that if the American people decide that they want to eliminate free speech, all you have to do is to get 37 states to agree to it.
Absolutely. You betcha.
The United States, the people of America can absolutely strip our rights away if enough of them decide that that's what they want to do.
Exactly right.
And if the California people want to strip what I consider to be a personal liberty away from gays, they have the right to do so under their constitution.
Yes, they do.
I think it's wrong. I think it's bad. I think it's unprincipled. I think it's, you know, just nightmarishly a terrible thing to do. But they have the absolute constitutional right to do that.
Yes, they do.
And on that basis, I think the lawsuit fails.
And I think that's right.
And
not that I think it's correct. I think it's right.
I think if it can be moved from there, I don't think it can be moved to the Supreme Court. I know they're going to do it. I don't know if it's wrong. I think it might be wrong. I think it'll be wrong for the same reason Roe v. Wade going to the Supreme Court was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, the state has made a decision. Popular vote has made it. It's within the Constitution of California. I think they have to do it. I think the Supreme Court has to say, sorry, you know, state's issue, not ours. And
exactly.
Something.
I mean, the most that they could do is say, did the voters of California approve that change to their constitution in a legal fashion? And they've already ruled on that.
Yeah. I think if the court, well, let me rephrase that. If the court rules that California, the Prop 8 stands, I think it ends there. I don't think they can take it to the Supreme Court. If it goes to the Supreme Court, I think it'll be kicked back.
Yeah.
If that judge rules against Prop 8 and it goes to the Supreme Court, I think we've got a different situation. I think the Supreme Court at that point would have to take it so they could overturn the judge in California. Anyway, that's where I think.
Yeah. Yep.
I think it's going to be interesting. I'd like to see it. I'd like to see the Supreme Court open it up. We'll see.
We'll have
50 seconds left.
Hey, just me, Pammy, Arkansas traveler, Louise Ma. Thanks for listening. Assuming that you did, and thank you much.
It's going to be an interesting week. They will be voting while we're. They'll be tabulating when we get on the air next week. So it should be rather interesting. We'll do a little bit of electioneering next week.
Wow.
In the meantime, you know, Prop 8, you know, trial will continue.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill, you macaca.
Yeah, that's
you have
me.
A good week, dude.
You too.
Everyone else, we'll talk to you next week.
Yep.
Be active. Be involved. And into the green room we go.
Cool.
Now, a little bit of things. You can't just let them out, CJ. They have to be leashed.
Uh-oh.
I saw dogs playing with a balloon. Bouncing the balloon. All right. I want to talk just a little bit more about the Prop 8 trial.
Yeah. Sure.
I've read the opening statements. On the opening statements alone, the judge has to rule against Prop 8. I don't think the defense is going to make a very good argument for itself.
Well, you know, it certainly surprised me. I mean, they've got expert witnesses coming in talking about procreation and all that kind of stuff, and I'm trying to figure out where in the world does that fit into this?
Well, because the whole premise of the state being able to enter into the process at all is that the state has a compelling interest in fomenting, that might not be the right way of saying it, you know, childbirth and child rearing. I mean, that has been the argument that's been used over and over and over again, is the state has a compelling interest in procreation and in maintaining good family structures for that procreation. If you eliminate that compelling interest, then you have a whole different thing. Now, I try to get someone to pay attention to the fact that the Iowa Supreme Court actually demolished that idea that, not that the state had an interest in doing so, it basically reaffirmed that the state had an interest in doing so. It just simply ruled that there was no evidence that gay marriage stopped that compelling interest in any way. Which is the argument that I've made, in as much as, and I've said this over and over again, and people seem to think that it's ridiculous to say it, but I say it all the time. Gay marriage does not end traditional marriage. Heterosexuals will still get married. They're not going to, you know, we're not all of a sudden going to have 90% of the marriages occurring are going to be between same-sex couples. Heterosexuals are not going to start marrying homosexuals just because they can. 98% of all the marriages are going to continue to be heterosexual marriages. And a very significant portion of those marriages are going to have children, raise children. Gay marriage isn't going to change that. It's not going to stop. It's not going to cause, I'm assuming that you and your significant other are very well established, and if gay marriage occurs in California, you weren't planning on getting a divorce to go, you know, find, you know, some fishing buddy, were you?
No, I wasn't. Not a bit.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, gay marriage is not going to create massive amounts of divorces of heterosexual couples that are going to go out and marry homosexual couples, you know, partners. It's just not going to happen. So the fear that it's going to destroy traditional marriage, there's no evidence of it. There's no evidence that it's happening in the states that allow it at this point. You know, traditional marriage will continue. And, you know, that's the place. I think that's the place where the argument falls apart, is that this abiding interest that the state has in promoting procreation and nuclear families isn't harmed by gay marriage. So that's the only place I think it can go, but I don't know how we can get there.
I don't know. I mean, Tracy, I would tell you this. The more that homosexuals insist that they've got to have the exact same thing called by the exact same name goes on, the harder that backlash is going to be. I mean, it just isn't going to, it isn't going to not do that.
Right. You know,
and then when you couple that with this thing with the guy that is looking to promote homosexuality in kindergarten on up in
right.
the education system.
I
mean, you guys have got a really tough row to hoe here.
I agree. The gay community is its own worst enemy.
Yep, absolutely.
I've been saying it for 15 years.
Yeah, I know.
That gay pride parades, for all the good it apparently does for the community, terrible visuals.
Oh, yeah.
In the straight community.
Yep.
For the gay community.
Yep.
Or, finally, you know,
yep.
we can have 10 months of wonderful press. Things that show, you know, great families and great strides. And then the gay pride comes up in 3 minutes worth of video on the evening news.
Yep.
Destroys the whole thing.
Destroys it. Yep.
Destroys
it. Absolutely.
Now, I understand that there is a significant minority in the straight community that understands that a majority of the gay community is normal people.
Yep.
We
absolutely
work and live in our communities.
Yep.
And are normal people.
Yep.
But there's a significant majority in the straight community that thinks that the only actual gay community is walking down, you know, Castro Street in San Francisco.
Exactly.
Wearing, oh my
nothing.
God.
Yeah, right.
Or not wearing anything.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
with police officers looking on.
You know, I've been to 3 parade prides, and I've looked at Victoria and went, CJ doesn't need to be here.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
It's not helpful for CJ.
No.
Okay. And we've avoided, you know, those particular portions of the parade.
Yeah.
You know, because
yep.
it's not appropriate for kids.
It is.
I don't care whose kids it is.
I guess, gay, straight, or otherwise, it ain't appropriate.
Oy. Oy. So, you know,
oh, man.
I understand that. The best thing that, you know, the radical left, and it's radical left, not just radical gay, it's radical left,
mm-hmm.
you know, that has, you know, is just nightmarish. I mean, the radical left that went after people that supported, you know, Prop 8 in the first place.
Oh, yeah.
You know, stupid. Now, I think you can certainly have pointed out that a very significant number of black churches were supporting Prop 8.
Yep.
I think you can point out that a significant amount of money came in from Utah and the Mormon Church in support of Prop 8.
Yep.
Okay. I think you can call those two things, and you should point them out and say, you know, here's an outside church trying to influence a secular system. Because, frankly, that's what we're talking about here.
Sure.
And that, you know, a traditionally extremely liberal, politically minority was very much against this liberal Prop 8. I think the thing that drives me crazy, and I think it drives a whole lot of people crazy, is that as conservative as the black community is, we certainly don't understand why they vote so much liberal.
That's true. Oh,
the black community is extremely conservative, especially on social issues.
Yep.
Probably more so even than the Baptists are.
I suspect that.
And anybody that believes that the black community can support, you know, liberal social issues is nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Delusional.
Mm-hmm.
So off the rocker that, you know, they're sitting on the floor.
Yeah,
they're
right.
Not. They're just not.
No, they aren't.
So, I do think that the appropriate legal response is that the plaintiffs in this case will fail. I think that's the correct legal position.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that there's a likelihood that he's going to rule in their favor.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if, based on the opening arguments, the defendants argue what they are going to argue. Because it's going to be, their positions are just going to be decimated. They're going to remake all the arguments that were made in the anti-Prop 8 ads, and, you know, those arguments have been destroyed in other legal cases. Just destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're going to try and hold those arguments, forget the legal, just on the two, presenting the two cases,
mm-hmm.
Based on the arguments that are apparently going to be presented and the evidence that are going to be presented, the plaintiffs will win this hands down. But a judge doesn't rule just on the merits of the arguments. They also rule on the law.
Mm-hmm.
And the law is against the plaintiffs in this case, in my opinion.
Yep. I agree.
So, will he rule on the merits or rule on the law? If he rules
this particular
merits,
judge, I think, probably rules on the merits.
I think he's going to rule on the merits. I agree. I think he's going to rule on the merits, and then it goes to the Supreme Court,
yeah.
And I think the plaintiffs get their hat handed to them and sent back.
Yep.
I
agree.
And it doesn't get into the Supreme Court. Now, I want you to think about this for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm getting way too conspiratorial.
Uh-oh. Look out.
I would argue that was the intent all along, was to get a case to be presented to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court shoot it down.
Hmm. Wow.
Now,
really?
That's really conspiratorially oriented.
Man, I guess, but for what purpose?
It would shoot down the right now what you've got is the Supreme Court has already basically said the states can deny gay marriage all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And don't bother bringing any constitutional objections to them doing so to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court's not interested in hearing them. So I think this is the only other avenue that's open is that, you can't make an argument. This is one of the arguments that I had with somebody yesterday. If a state rules that gay marriage is constitutional according to the state constitution,
mm-hmm.
doesn't rely on the U.S. Constitution to strike down a state law,
mm-hmm.
If they take the state constitution and strike down a state law using the state constitution, then whatever the Supreme Court has ruled is irrelevant. Because
okay.
The state is acting wholly within itself.
Right.
Now, of course, the argument is if the state wholly within itself argues that you don't have the right to bear arms, does the Supreme Court have the right to step in that situation? And that's
okay.
Actually getting ready to come to the Supreme Court anyways.
Yeah, it is.
You know,
via incorporation, right.
So, this is why I want to, you know, I'm focusing on the principle of the matter. You know,
mm-hmm.
people, you know, it's not about laws, you know, laws change. It's not about, you know, definitions change. It's not about traditions change. It's about principles, you know, and you and I actually agree on that point, even if we don't agree on the result.
Right. Yep.
So,
Yep. You talk about laws change and all that kind of stuff and traditions change and that and all that, and I'm saying, yeah, well, okay, so where is the respect for marriage? As it is currently defined.
And my argument is that, you know, gay couples are trying to give marriage a great deal of respect.
Really?
We're trying to say is this institution, which we find to be so fundamental to our relationship, that we want to be part of that tradition. We want to embrace that tradition. We want to show the world that this is a relationship that we feel is so strong and so, you know, established that it honors the tradition of marriage. That it absolutely says, you know, we are committed to each other. Everything that a straight couple says to each other, a gay couple says exactly the same things. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's that bond, it's that permanent, you know, focus upon taking care of each other, you know, all of that commitment to that
mm-hmm.
relationship, you know, says we agree. Marriage is a bonding of two people together. It, you know, we want to honor that. We want to say this is important to us. This is fundamental to this relationship. We're not just, you know, throwing a piece of paper against the wall and saying, "See, hey, we're married." No, this is a fundamental aspect of the relationship to say, "Hey, we are a couple bound together." That we're taking ourselves to the point where we're saying, you know, in front of friends, family, and God, we are committing ourselves to this relationship, you know, wholeheartedly, you know, to function as a single unit.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think we're trying to say, you know, we honor marriage. We're not trying to destroy it. We're trying to say, yes, we think it's so important that we want part of it too, because our relationship, you know, and oh, I understand that most people can't understand that, but our relationship as a couple is so intensely oriented towards helping each other that it is the same type of, you know, relationship
mm-hmm.
that marriage
mm-hmm.
naturally seeks to encourage and bind, you know,
mm-hmm.
a couple together. No, this is something that doesn't get a whole lot of play. No, gay couples are trying to say that marriage is not a a badge of honor. We're trying to say that we honor and respect the tradition so much that our relationship, you know, functions at that high level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is not just a sexual relationship. This is a relationship that is, you know, that functions at that next level beyond the physical, you know, into the spiritual,
mm-hmm.
the emotional,
mm-hmm.
the physical. It's that all-encompassing, you know, relationship we want, you know, to acknowledge that's what this relationship is.
Mm-hmm. You know, what you ought to do is sit down with that same passion and put it into more ordered words and submit that to Hillbuzz. See if they'll post it.
You know,
And I'm, you know, I'm not here arguing for your point of view. I'm just saying, you want to get a wider audience, then that's what you ought to do. With that same passion.
You know, it just drives me crazy.
I know.
You know.
I know it does. It
drives me crazy. So
you know. I frankly prefer to try and stay away from that as much as I can. I will fight tooth and toenail about abortion, but you know, as far as gay marriage is concerned, I understand both sides of the argument. I'm probably more sympathetic to the straight side of that argument, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I am not persuadable.
You know, I think in the end, I think if the gay community can quit shooting itself in the foot, hell, quit
that
shooting itself in the head.
Yes.
quit shooting itself in the head, I think, you know, a majority of Americans are willing to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
I do, you know, but, you know, every time you end up with somebody like, you know, what's his name, that tried to do, you know, the NAMBLA stuff at the school level.
Jennings.
Schools are, you know, you sit there and kind of go, what kind of fucking idiot
what are you doing? I mean, that isn't appropriate for any kid. I mean, I don't care straight or gay.
Right.
It ain't appropriate.
I don't want kindergartners talking about sex.
No, Jesus.
I don't care if
I don't want third graders talking about it.
I have a really big problem with, you know, a 27-year-old teacher bedding down her 13-year-old, you know, male student.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
You know, I got a problem with that. I got a huge
mm-hmm.
big problem with that.
Yeah, huge.
You know what?
That brings up a thought. You always hear about the guy who beds down the 13-year-old girl, and you always hear about the 27-year-old teacher, female, that beds down the 13-year-old boy. How come we don't hear about that same male or female teacher bedding down the same-sex kid? Now, you know it happens. But we never hear about it, do we?
Let me rephrase it this way. You were probably, I didn't know you then, but I'm going to suggest that I think that when the Bankruptcy Reform Act was being proposed, you were for it, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
I was a banker at the time.
Okay. Are you still for it?
Like almost all legislation, it overstepped itself. Do I think it needed to be reformed? Yes. Do I like the way that the reform worked? No.
Well, you and I have talked about it on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
98% of the people that file bankruptcy pass the means test.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that means that a vast majority of the people simply don't have the ability to pay.
Exactly.
So that's 98% of the people. 95% of the people that file Chapter 13 pass the means test.
Mm-hmm.
Which means they're doing a repayment plan in spite of the fact that they could do a Chapter 7.
Yes.
Okay. The percentage of Chapter 13 to Chapter 7 has not significantly changed. It's changing now. There are more 7s than 13s in the last 18 months than the first 2 years of the change of the law.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's just reflecting the fact that the economy is taking a shit.
Exactly.
But I expect it to return to normal once other things return to normal.
Yes.
Here's the thing. One of the arguments for the modification was that as much as 10% of bankruptcy filings were fraudulent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That would suggest that 150,000 the last year before the law changed, 150,000 bankruptcies were fraudulent.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the funny thing about it is that bankruptcy fraud is a federal offense. And do you know how many of those 150,000 fraudulent cases the feds took to court?
Well, probably zero.
About 0.01%.
Is that right? Yeah.
Less than 100 cases.
Yep.
Okay. Because this is what they consider to be fraud. One of our clients appeared at the 341 hearing, which is a hearing that is held in front of an administrative hearing to find out whether they can actually file the bankruptcy or not.
Yeah,
and our
okay.
client had a stud earring in one ear.
Okay.
It was a rivet earring, which means it was just a piece of metal with a stud and a clip on it.
Mm-hmm.
No jewelry in it.
Okay.
The trustee noted that he had listed no jewelry in his petition. The stud was probably worth $2.
Mm-hmm.
The trustee demanded, in a very polite way, that the paperwork be amended to show the jewelry. By definition, that was a fraudulent bankruptcy petition.
Well, Tracy, okay. I mean, you know, I am sure that you can show those kinds of frauds. On the other hand, when you have people keeping million-dollar homes, you know that there's fraud going on. Then,
and I'm telling you that in those cases where fraud is that egregious,
mm-hmm.
okay, the feds prosecuted it. And the feds made big deals out of their prosecution of cases like that
mm-hmm.
because, in fact, they were extremely rare.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely rare.
Well, I mean, that's the history of legislation, though. It kills an elephant to get to a flea.
And that's my issue as far as the gay marriage. Is that the horrible, nightmarish thing that we have to protect against is
mm-hmm.
in fact way overblown. And if we just get to the actual heart of the issue, down to the brass tacks,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
to give the tools to the people to make sure that those, you know, 100 cases get taken care of,
mm-hmm.
you know, that first of all, that they can find them easily and that they can take care of them. Which was the intent of the means test, which is to find the people that are trying to
mm-hmm,
cheat
mm-hmm.
or game the system. You know, then we would be much better off in those situations. But it's hyperbole. You know, it's, you know, the horrible, nightmarish things don't occur.
Yep.
It's used to force people to do things.
Yep.
Anyways,
on that,
okay.
we do not disagree.
All right.
Alrighty, kiddo.
We will be talking about Massachusetts next Tuesday.
Yes, we will.
In the meantime, not much else is going on unless another macaca moment comes up.
Yeah, right.
We did not talk about Sarah Palin becoming a contributor to Fox News.
We did not. And in
Boy,
fact,
let me tell you,
I understand that she was on... O'Reilly tonight. She's going to be on with an hour with Beck tomorrow. And then I don't know.
Oh, that's just going to cause heads to explode all over the place.
Oh, man. There's going to be brains leaking out all over. that's going to be fun.
I'm going to walk around Madison and I'm going to see people with blood coming out of their ears and nose.
There you go.
What happened? Palin, Beck. Play.
Yeah, they are. It's going to be fun to watch. And, you know, I think maybe we'll collect a few of the tweets from P2 and places like that and see what they have to say.
Yeah. I don't dip into P2.
Is that right? At all? Ever?
At all. Never.
Wow.
I mean, I have followers that are liberal, so, you know, I see some of their stuff, but I don't dip into P2. And for those people that don't know, Twitter has a way to track certain types of comments and people. P2 is the progressives on Twitter, and, you know, that's kind of like, you know, sticking your hand into the shit sewer just to see,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
how
yeah,
thick it is.
Yeah.
Not interested. Sorry.
Not interested.
I'm
going to dip into them just to see what they have to say about Sarah on Beck tomorrow. It ought to be illuminating.
Yeah, well, keep the soap around.
Yeah, right. the hand sanitizer and stuff. You betcha.
Keep the bucket around. Don't eat before you do that.
Yeah, right.
William, I will talk to you next week.
You betcha. Have a good
night. Good night, everybody.
Good night.